What's up, Cubs? Welcome back to Cheer Up, Babe, the podcast. I'm your host, VJ Julio, and this is episode this number of Cheer Up, Babe, the podcast. I appreciate y'all being here. Welcome back to the den, babe. Let's get into it. Let's get buck wild with a story time. Let's get absolutely shithouse crazy with a story time from the jump. Let's get it rolling. Listen, all right? So I made a couple TikTok videos. I know, okay? I don't need your ick to be received. I received it. I said the word TikTok, and then all of us collectively inside went, ugh, right? But I did that because I was bored. That's really all it is for me. I get bored for a couple days, and then I'm like, yeah. I'll make a quick little TikTok video. So I made a funny little TikTok video. I was hype coming home from the gym. I was all caffeinated and shit. I was just like riding high. It's like, oh, my biceps feel big, so I'm all caffeinated as shit. Driving home from the gym. And I was just like a video about fighting my inner demons to quit everything that I'm doing and start a YouTube golfing career. Because I'm a golfer now. You guys know that. I just went and played a simulator and shot 23 over on a simulator in 9 holes. But I'm a golfer now. You know, we got the golf sponsorship. Shout out Shankit Golf. Obviously going to be promoting that more when it's actually warm season. But I made a video, and I was just, it was just a funny, offhanded, sarcastic video, so it didn't really mean anything, okay? Then I got to work that day, bro. And dude, I've never worked for corporate America before, all right? I've worked for companies before. I've worked for like a little local company where I know the owner. Like that's been what I've used to. I build a relationship with the people that are invested with the company. And my current position is the first like nationwide company that it's like, I don't know anybody. I obviously don't know who owns the shit, you know? I don't know the companies that own the shit. It's like one of those types of things where essentially you're just a number, you know? But you're broken to small teams and you build rapport and relationships with your small teams, you know? And the reason that I'm in this is because like it provides a good living for my family, all right? As you guys know, when we moved back, I had to keep rakes. I have 3 rakes just lined up on the wall back here to deal with all this extra cash, all right? Now, the juxtaposition of that is that this job inherently sucks. Now, the day-to-day is fine. The day-to-day, I like it. I get to talk with people all day. And if there's one thing you need to know about your mans, it's I love interpersonal communication, okay? I love it so much that I make sure I know the legitimate word for it, interpersonal communication. I love that shit, dude. I love making bonds, and I love people trusting me, and I love cultivating a relationship with a stranger randomly on the phone to where then we get to go forward in our lives together and be a part of each other's lives in a beneficial standpoint. I love that. That feeds my soul, regardless of what capacity it's in. I know that if I'm able to provide a service to somebody, that feeds my soul, right? So what I don't know is like, dude, am I utilizing it in the right way? Since this is a passion of mine, since this is a skill of mine, since I do have a lot of talent in the way of helping others and being able to use my words at that capacity to where it hits home and it improves someone's life. Now, there's a lot of pressure around that, right? Because that's where I feel most in my zone, you know? That's my rhythm. That's where I'm vibing. That's my flow state, babe. And I just love that, okay? Now I'm doing that essentially in a sales position for a publicly traded nationwide company, right? So it's not like I matter. Like that's definitely the energy when you work for corporate America. It's not like you matter. I matter individually. So anyways, I'm getting all lost in the weeds right now. But dude, I show up to work, right? Now there's over 400 salespeople. There's way more women than dudes. There's over 400 salespeople. There's over 400 saleswomen, and there's some guys sprinkled in there in this position, okay? And suddenly, we get to work, and we're just kicking off our day. We're on the Slack channels. Look at this picture of my dog from last night. OMG, that's great. My best friend's daughter's transitioning. I'm just like, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? Why am I here? But anyways, just work is normal. And we just do the little communications in the beginning of the day, and then we get kicked off into our, however we set up our days. We're normally at work. And then suddenly the Slack channels are blowing up. By the way, Slack channel is like our messaging system. It's how we talk with each other. It's a software. It's like Snapchat, but for corporations. And suddenly the Slack channels just blow up, babe. They're just like, everybody else have this meeting? What's going on with this meeting? What's going on with this meeting? And apparently a bunch of people in the company, like multiple members of my team and then all other teams as well that I like talk with people within, everyone's like, does everyone have this meeting? What's this about? It's in 10 minutes. What's going on? It said mandatory meeting revenue expectations. And they set it on everybody's calendar 10 minutes before the meeting was going to happen. That doesn't happen. Okay. That doesn't happen. Now, me, old greeny beanie with corporations, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I have no idea. But here's essentially what happened. 10 minutes before the meeting, people get a meeting notification. Meeting starts. 10 minutes later, everyone's fucking fired, dude. Everyone got fucking fired. 25% of the company gone. All right. Gonski Reblonski. Okay. Cut, line, and sinker, as they say, dude. No, not me. I didn't have that meeting. Still employed. I am what I am, I'm a hooligan. You know what I mean, but it shook the earth, because here's my whole position. I was able to kind of convince myself of like, you've never been in a position like this. Ride this wave and get as far as you can and be as successful as you can within this, because that's just how you're going to operate no matter where you're at, right? Wherever I'm at, I'm going to try to climb to the top. It's just, I'm never content, right? But then this comes in and it's like, oh no, dude, not just the salespeople got cut loose. My boss got fired. Like four other people, teams, bosses got fired. Then you got directors that are above our bosses getting fucking fired. 25% of the company gone, bro. Gone. Not me, Survivor. Cast me in the next season of Survivor. I'll win. Okay? Go ahead and throw me in the next season of Survivor. I'll win. As long as I can FaceTime my family intermittently, I'll win. Okay? I'll put $1 million on myself so that when I win, I double that money. I will gamble $1 million that I would win fucking Survivor. You want to know why? Have you seen the people on Survivor? What? Janice, who does nails, won the last season? I'm just kidding. I don't actually watch that show. I just know that I would win because I'm egotistical and slightly narcissistic. But my shining resume aside, like my best friend in the company got fired. I absolutely loved my boss. She is a G. Fired. Well, actually, they gave them the option to get demoted so they wouldn't have to give them a severance package, because technically they offered them another job position. So if they chose not to take the reduced job position and they decided to leave, the company could say that they left on their own accord because they had offered them a position so they didn't have to pay them any severance. I love corporate America. It's so sick. I'm just like, I'm seeing all of this really, really neat stuff, cool stuff, really vibe and high type stuff. And I'm really happy to be a part of something like this. Just kidding. Okay. Let me tell you the parameters of what happened, dude. That happened on a Tuesday, all right, at like 9:30 in the morning. 25% of that company, gone. Everyone's computers got shut off like an hour later that was involved in this. 25% of the company, gone on a Tuesday. That Tuesday night, they had an investors meeting, right? So all of the shareholders that own stock in our company, they were having the like profit sharing meeting where it shows that the company is profitable. Now, how is the company that is not profitable showing a bunch of profit to their shareholders? They cut 25% of their cost 7 hours before, dude. They cut 25% of their cost so that the charts show that it's super profitable, because suddenly their costs are so far down, right? I mean, I love it, dude. It's such a smart system, such a cool setup. Really, really makes you want to remain loyal to a company like that. Oh, and then I forgot, after that profit sharing meeting that night, the next morning, a random other company bought 750,000 shares of stock, essentially gearing up to buy out our company and rebrand. Now, you said, Vijay, your boss got fired. What did you do? Oh, they put another boss in the position that doesn't actually operate within our stream. So there's like kind of There's two big sales heads of this company. They sell two different things. This guy came from the other sales head, has no idea about the stuff that we sell, right? And essentially, he's not taking the steps to try to learn it. And here's what I think. I think they're going to do a huge swing maneuver. This company is going to buy them out. They're going to rebrand, and they're going to focus on the other aspect of the company where essentially my job almost becomes obsolete, or at least you don't need the amount of people that are in our position to be in our position. It's business. It's corporate. It's awesome. It really makes you feel like you have a strong structure to stand on. Dude, it's been a wild week. Sorry I didn't release an episode last week. Been going through it, babe. Been going through it. So naturally, and I don't care if they fucking, I don't care if they find this episode and then it's like, you're gone, because they've moved the parameters of performance. So the way that my company is set up is it's market specific. Like there's a California team, there's an Idaho team, there's a Utah team. There's, you know, like all the states that we operate in have their own teams and therefore have their own parameters, right? And let's say, for example, you have to do 4 deals in my market in order to be hitting your performance expectations, right? In California, you have to hit 10, okay? And what they've done is they took the parameters for the markets that are like hyper successful and they spread it into the markets that are lower because there's less people. And once I find a new job, I'll explain more of this in general. But then again, I don't want you to judge me for what I do, but we're going to talk about it. It's fine, dude. Everything's out in the open. So what they did is they took those parameters from the super successful markets like California and Florida and New York, and they spread it into the lower performing markets, meaning that all of the sales reps that are in the lower performing markets have to hit the same numbers as the hyper successful markets. Those are the parameters being moved, what the parameters are being moved to. So essentially what's going to happen is nobody in these lower markets is going to be able to hit these performance because there's just not the amount of deals available in these markets for that standard, right? So what they're going to be able to do is fire another 70% of the company within the next 2 months because they're not hitting performance reviews, right? So I see the writing on the wall. I see the writing on the wall, all right? And it's just, okay, time to fucking transition, dude. So now I have my feelers to the ground. I'm using my native side of my bloodline. That's right. I have native in my blood. I know my eyebrows tell you otherwise and my overall disposition and the color of my skin, but I have native in my blood. Okay. So I'm harnessing that energy. I'm calling to my two ancestors down the bloodline that have that. And I'm putting my ear to the fucking ground and I'm waiting for the footsteps. Okay. Actually, no, you know what? I put my ear to the ground. I heard the footsteps. Now I need to find higher ground. So that's what I'm doing. We're transitioning, we're throwing our name out there. But I say all that to say it's been a crazy week and maybe I just do the YouTube golf thing. You know what I mean? Jordan said, absolutely not, you suck at golf. And I said, be fun though. She said, and she would say, you need to make the same amount of money you're making in order for us to survive. And I go, welcome to the plight of man. Okay? Welcome to the guy's life. And I'm not complaining about that. I love that role. But in that role, you can't just go make a YouTube golf career, you fucking dork. So essentially, I tell you all that to say, down the road, you're going to see Boone and I drop just the most relatable YouTube golf video of all time. I'm just going to create a YouTube golf video with me and my brother, and it's going to absolutely blow up, and that's going to be my life from there on out. I can't tell you how excited I am to go golfing with my little brother and to coach with him next year. Like the level of integration we get to do in our lives now is so exciting and fun. He lives right fucking there. I've mentioned it 1,000 times. I'm pointing to his front door right now, babe. And like, can't wait for the snow to freaking melt and for it to warm up and people be able to actually mow grass so that we can go golfing all the fucking time and then start coaching together. And I'm so fucking fired up about it. It's going to be fun. I love golfing with my family. I'm so old. I'm such a basic ass dad now, but I love it so much, dude. And I know, you want to know why? I love dynamics so much. I love watching my little brother's personality that has zero clue on how to handle our father's personality in the heat of the moment try to handle my father's personality in the heat of the moment. Dude, when we went golfing, the three of us went golfing before last winter, went like right when I got back to Idaho. We went golfing and we're there. Boone's playing out of his left asshole, dude. That's right. He has two. I told him I would never tell anybody, but here we are. He's playing so far out of his left nut, dude. Like every shot right down the fucking center, greening like every freaking hole. It's just beautiful. He's playing out of his ass. And now the thing about our family is it's competition, and I don't give a shit what you're doing, okay? I don't give a shit how much fun you're having. If you're playing cornhole, dude, we will try to make you cry playing cornhole in the backyard. That is what we will do, okay? I know what you're thinking. Sounds like a blast. It is when you're winning, okay? But if you're losing, you're going to be mad that you're losing. And we're going to chirp you, dude. That's my family. So even when we have a dad-son's golf outing, we just go, let's just go golf a quick little nine-holer at a three-par golf course, very, very low skill level, and let's just have some fun and play some golf. And then Boone pulls out ahead, and Dad plays like absolute shit. Now, there's a reason that I never went golfing when I was younger, when I was the only child, because I'm 7 years older than Boone and I'm 11 years older than Gunner. So there was a huge gap there where I was the only son. There was a huge gap there where I was the only kid. So Dad tried to take me golfing a few times. I got stung on the inside of the ear by a bee my first time. I chose that I didn't like that, but mainly it wasn't the bee thing. It was the fact that my dad would be three holes into a golf round and he'd be breaking his clubs and shit. Okay? Because we're competitive. You know, and we don't really know how to harness underperformance. It's not in our DNA, which is why we thrive on good performance. All right. But so I went golfing with my dad like three or four times when I was a kid. And then we as a group came to the concurrence that this probably isn't the healthiest outlet for us because it never once has been fun. Okay. So I didn't golf with my dad for like 20 fucking 9 years, you know, but Dad gets a little bit more mature and calmed down in his older age after I leave the house. And suddenly he's going golfing with my little brothers and shit all the time. And it's a great pastime for him. What a wonderful connection. I wasn't jealous about it at all. I wasn't fucking salty about that one at all. Oh, you got mature dad and you got to go play golf. Fuck you. Okay. But anyways, I'm not mad about it. And so I move back, we go golfing, right? Dad's playing like shit. And Boone is performing out of his ass. So not only is Dad mad at how he's playing golf, Boone, he's upset that Boone is absolutely mopping the course with him right now, right? So Dad gets a little chippy. We're on hole five. Boone's like three or four strokes ahead. Dad's getting aggressive, not saying anything, but he's doing that shutdown thing, right? And when our father... We have that in us too. When we do our shutdown shit, our families, everyone's butthole tightens up, dude. Our families, everyone in our family knows when one of the Julio boys shuts down, everyone's butthole tightens up. And you might think that sounds like some toxic masculinity. Oh, it is. Oh, it is. Our competitive streaks are not healthy, but they get us where we need to be in life. Okay? Now, the thing about me, as the oldest brother, I don't get tight butthole when my dad gets his negatively competitive mode. I don't. I enjoy it because I'm a silly bitch, all right? I'm always down for the laughs. I'm always down to clown with it. And when dad's underperforming, you know, I'm not going to poke the bear necessarily, but I'm also not going to try to make the bear feel better in the way of golf. Now, Boone can't fucking take it, dude. If there's tension in the air and there's a confrontation of brewing, he can't handle it. And Boone is our sensitive soul, okay? Boone is our softer soul, dude. So, and the worst thing you can do around old grandpa cub is softer soul him. Just keep playing the game and give him props when he gives a good shot, but just in a realistic way, and kind of chuckle at him and try to flick him a little bit of shit to take the edge of like, hey, pops, this isn't so serious. You know, that's how you actually handle it. Here's what you don't do. okay? When he's made six bad shots in a row and he's real down on himself and pissy and doing the motherfucker shit underneath his breath and shit, what you don't do is on his next good shot, go, there you go, Pops. Nice shot. I didn't sarcastically drop that tone at all. That's Boone verbatim, because he's standing behind him on the tee box, literally on eggshells, because he doesn't know how to handle it. Dad makes a good swing, and Boone goes, there you go, Pops. Nice shot. Like he's talking to a child. And I fucking hit him. Shut the fuck up. Why would you? You're going to make it worse, dude. What are you going to do? Now, granted, we're all grown men. All right. Boone's 23. No, Boone's 24. I'm 31. And we're playing with our father, who's going to be 60. Okay. So it's like we're all just grown men out on a course. And we still have that. We still have that, oh God, dad's mad energy. We still have that, oh God, I hope dad plays good today. Boone's back there like, hey, it's all right, dad. Chin up, but sincerely. It's like, don't do that sincerely. Flick him shit, dude. You want to know how we turned it around? Me. With my, I know exactly what to say to my father to bring him back to reality. Because it's easy for us to get down on ourselves. It's easy for us to let an underperformance just ruin our day, bro. Just ruin our day. So we're walking after the good tee shot, after Boone opens his flapping lips and goes, nice shot, dad. We're walking to our balls. And I go, who would have fucking thought? And it kind of gets their attention and I go, we haven't got to be together in like 3 years. Like all of us just hanging out and getting to go golfing. Now we all live here. We get to do this whenever we want. I was like, dad, you got your boys back. Yeah, I know. High five. Fucking high five me. Because it's true. And it also brings the focus into what's actually happening on the course. A dad who loves his sons, who has not been able to have his sons around for years because we all grew up and went out and we were doing our own thing for so long, we're all now back. And we get to be back in each other's lives on a daily basis. You bring that reality, that's how you handle I didn't swing the golf club well fit, okay? That's how you handle that. You definitely don't patronize. You definitely don't go, well, what about that? That's a daddy, that's a good shot. I fucking love it, dude. I fucking love it. It's so fun having the dynamic back around and everything. And speaking of freaking hanging out with Boone, like we got back from the state tournament. Hey, you guys know the story. Lane and Lucky were fucking wrestling. Julian got to go because he was a wild card. He didn't end up getting to wrestle in the tournament because all the other kids make weight. Fucking dorks. So Julian didn't get to wrestle, but Lucky and Lane did. And dude, you want to know the coolest thing? Now, these kids, not only, they've never reached like the pinnacle of whatever sport they were doing because we come from a school that doesn't really have the best coaching and that kind of stuff. So, and then obviously with wrestling, they have no idea. Because their wrestling program started this last year. So it's not like they understand the scope of what wrestling is or what the state tournament is. I can't tell you how much fun it was to show up at the arena where state is and walk them out. It was at the Holt Arena, which is in Pocatello. And it's a huge, it's where the Idaho State Bengals have their home football games and stuff. And it's just, it's a huge arena. It's giant. And you fill that whole fucking turf football field with wrestling mats, like 20 something wrestling mats. It's a spectacle. And the entrance to the Holt Arena, you walk in through the side doors. And as you come out of the tunnel, you're looking down on the arena. So you get the whole grand scope. Walking those three boys down that tunnel and watching their eyes turn into saucers. Dude, I was like Will Ferrell in that fucking politician movie. I was just like, Welcome to the fucking show, boys. Welcome to the show. This is the deal. This is why we freaking kill ourselves every day at practice. Right here. To make it to this shit. So just bringing them there. It's their first experience with anything of that size and that nature. And they handled themselves so well. You know. There was more excitement around it than nerves. Like, of course they were nervous. It's a state tournament. It's a big freaking deal. You got 13,000 fans watching wrestling in one freaking arena. It was a blast, and it's such a cool experience for these kids. And it was really fun revisiting too, because like obviously I competed in those tournaments and did well in those tournaments, and so like revisiting that and getting to watch like this generation of kids experienced the tournament. Also, the tournament has grown. Like, there's more spectators now than even when I was wrestling. And there's like women's wrestling now that are operating on a mat. It caused like a 20% increase in viewership and stuff. Like, so the spectacle has just grown and grown and grown. So like watching these kids, getting to watch these, I keep saying kids, I should give them more credit than that. Getting to watch them go through that experience for the first time and handle it well. Sick as shit. So sick. It's like, that's the stuff that feeds my soul. And that's why I'm so excited to start coaching again. But just to, man, there's no better lesson to teach a kid that age than sacrifice for a goal. And when that goal pays off, that feeling of accomplishment is unmatched, absolutely unparalleled. And getting to be a part of that process, what more would you want, dude? Oh, selfishly make money for a corporation? Get the fuck out of here, dude. Life is short. Make a difference. That's where I'm at right now. I'm in my bow my fucking neck era, dude. I'm in my bow my neck era and give era. That's where I'm at. Like, I want to serve because I've gotten so much. I have so much. I have the best possible life partner that anyone could ever find. It is the most perfect fit for me. You know, it's like, whatever, you know, the most perfect fit for me. We've cultivated an amazing family. I have genuinely everyone who at their deathbed hopes that they have got to experience in their life. I have that. And I'm also aware of that right now. Like, how cool is that, dude? So this concept of like more, it doesn't sit right with me. So it's like, I need to have a job that provides well for my family so that they can not be shorted on anything. Like, I want my daughters to be able to experience everything, and I don't want financial burden to be that. So I need to make that level of income to provide them the most opportunity that I can. That's my role with my job. Every other aspect of my life, I want it to be in service. I want it to be in the beneficial growth of another person or group of people. That is where I'm at right now. And I know that that's the only way that I'm going to feel fulfilled. I've done all the individual shit. I've done all of that. So I'm straight. I've literally set my life up in a way that it's like, I can't ask for more. And I also shouldn't keep fighting for more and more and more and more, because I'm going to get fucking fat. Because that's so gluttonous, dude. I know what I have, and I know that that's enough. And I love that. And I also love that I'm not realizing that in 20 years. I get to realize that now. So I'm deep in the service era of my life. And now it's just figuring pathways and navigating my day-to-day schedule to be able to align with that, so that one doesn't necessarily sacrifice for another. Like, I want to make sure that my career, whatever the next one is, doesn't hinder my time with my family, which doesn't hinder my time in service. So yeah, dude, we're serving. I'm serving, dude. Oh, you're serving with your dance moves, dude? I'm going to serve in life, dog. Okay. And nothing like a little 25% layoff to really shake loose the bolts that were convincing you that you had everything lined up, dude. Sometimes you need a little shakeup. You need to make a transition. And you need to continually do that. I feel like life is made up of like a bunch of 10%. Like 10, this makes up 10% of your life. This makes up 10% of your life. This makes up 10% of your life. And it's a building block to where you reach success and contentment in one of those, pile another one on. And eventually, as you continue to navigate that way with what feels right to you and what serves you in your life, in those avenues is how you eventually stack up the most perfect lived life that you can. And that's all I'm focusing on right now. And I love it. Now, these kids wrestled at state, performed well. I mean, they both came in with like the lowest ranking because they don't really have that much experience and they have a few losses on their belt because it's their first year wrestling. So both of them from the jump of the tournament, because it's seeded, meaning like there's a number one seed, the kid expected to win it. He goes against the last place seed first round. You know, it's kind of like a weeding out process. Both Lane and Lucky got like the number one draws in the tournament. So they both had to wrestle the best kid in their weight class. First match of their first state tournament in the big arena. Oh, wake up call, dude. But they didn't get all fucking down on themselves and shit. Like, they were bummed, but they also didn't let that carry over. They shook that shit off, and both of them got freaking wins their next round. And it was sick. It was sick. So both of these boys can say, hey, I started wrestling 2 months ago for my whole life. I made it to the show. And I didn't just go two losses and out of the tournament. I won. I scored points for my team. I got a win. Stepping in the big stage, stepping on the big ring, my first year wrestling. And the amount of empowerment that that's going to carry over into the confidence that they'll get next season. Lucky is unfortunately a senior. He's done, but I'm so proud of him for what he was able to do. He was a ball player, dude, and he sacrificed that in order to join the wrestling team and challenge himself to do something, and he did it, and he pulled it off, and he finished it out. Now, Lane, we got more time with Lane. Lane gets to freaking shine. We got so many boys that I'm so excited to coach. I'm excited to watch Juge next year. I'm just excited to like be in the room coaching them and putting them through. So my focus is going to be on skill development. So basically body awareness. Boone's going to be all the moves and focusing on moves and technique. Boone's going to button down like, hey, here's how you take this shot and get in on this leg and work this angle to try to get the takedown. I'm going to be, know where the fuck you are in positions. Know what your feet are supposed to be doing. Know how your hips are supposed to be placed. Know what your weight disbursement is supposed to be. I'm going to try to get them into second nature of that, and that's going to be my focus. Also, their lungs are my responsibility. The shape that they're in is my responsibility. And these kids don't fucking know what's coming, dude. They don't know the amount of work that they're going to have to put in to get that shit ironed out. But there's no greater feeling than how you feel within your own body at the end of a really, really hard wrestling season. You're a different person. Your level of athleticism and body awareness is not anything that you know you're capable of. It's crazy. It's crazy. And I'm so excited to be that instrument. Now, having said that, the state tournament itself was fucking disgusting. They mopped the mats once. What? Dude, let me tell you. When I was wrestling, they had breaks after every single round to mop the mats. It's a two-day tournament, and there's like three rounds or four rounds per day, depending on the day. In between each of those rounds, they have everyone get off the mats, and they mop the mats to get the disgusting ringworm and skin diseases and impetigo and mat herpes off of the mat. This tournament, I've never been more fucking disappointed. They mopped the mats once at the end of day one. So that means morning of day one, everyone fucking weighs in, and then people start warming up. So people are just throwing their shit on the mats, and it's like you got bags and shit on the mats and people's shoes and shit like that all over the mats. And then they just go ahead and wrestle an entire day's worth of wrestling matches on those mats, sweat, blood, all that shit. At the end of that day, they mop the mats. And then the next day, all the way through to the end, I was like, yeah, 60% of these kids are getting fucking staph. Like, like all of these kids are going to have ringworm, you know? Hope you like mat herpes. It's forever. It's forever. Don't ask me how I know that. It's forever. Okay? Sometimes you'll be at a national wrestling tournament when you're 9 years old and you'll wrestle this badass little black kid with just the most abrasive hair of all time, and he will absolutely rub your face skin off with his head. He will rip your cheeks and chin. The skin will be off, you know? Like, it's like they took sandpaper and gave you a facial, dude. It was crazy, all right? You'll be 9 years old, and you'll be at a tournament where they don't clean the mats, and then your skin will get opened up in that match, and then you'll get mat herpes, and then every time winter comes, every year for the rest of your life, where those abrasions happened, where the infection got in, you'll have a flare-up on your cheek. I'm just speaking in hypotheticals, right? So maybe mop the fucking mats, okay? Now, one more thing I want to talk about. It was the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen. They did the national anthem at the tournament, and there's a huge American flag that drops down. It's like probably 60 yards wide, so you can imagine how long it is. And that drops from the ceiling of the whole arena. And a six-year-old boy rocking the toughest mullet of all time, wearing an American flag denim vest, sang the national anthem. Have you heard of anything more American? The only thing that would have made it more American is if there was a fucking bald eagle on his shoulder. And I tell you what, I watched him for 50% of the national anthem. I looked at the flag and I kept looking at him because I was so impressed by the confidence on this six-year-old kid. I was so impressed by him. And as I was watching him, I saw his aura and there was a bald eagle on his shoulder, okay? The aura was a bald eagle on his fucking shoulder. I was like, first of all, never seen anything more Idaho. Second of all, never seen anything more American. So glad to be back. Kid crushed the national anthem. And you better believe when it's that during that national anthem part where it's time to crush that tune, where it's time to, for the land of the free. Kid held a note. Whole crowd cheered, full body chills. I was like, dude, the confidence on that six-year-old kid. That kid has more nuts than 96% of the 13,000 people that were in that arena, dude. I was like blown away. I was blown away. And all I was thinking is, I wonder if my daughters would be interested in doing something like that. They don't have to have a mullet, but they're for sure getting the American flag denim jacket. I fucking tell you that much, dude. They're getting the vest. That's the freaking denim American flag, dude. I tell you that. They're not going to have mullet because they have beautiful little hair as they have right now. But I was just like, dude, that kid's six. That kid's 6 years old. Holy Santa Claus shit. Like, how do I cultivate the amount of confidence in my daughters that they are comfortable enough in their own capabilities at that age to perform like that? I was blown away. So cool. But anyways, yeah, that was a little update for you, dude. Keeping my ear to the ground, transitioning some shit, happy in life. I hope you're happy in life as well. Super proud of my freaking kids, competing at state, and just an overall absolute fucking roller coaster of a couple weeks. Just an absolute brain melter of a couple weeks. Going through it. Going through it. But staying positive, because that's what we do, babe. We cheer up. We posture the fuck up. And we bow our stones and we get the fuck after it. That's what we do, babe. That's what the den is. And that's what you're going to... Oh, is your job hard right now? I know, babe. All of us are. All of us jobs are. Okay? We're all stressing. You know? Get in your bow your fucking neck era. That's what we're going to do. All of these decisions that are happening outside of your life that are affecting your life, nah. Water off a fucking duck's back. Roll it off. Keep moving. Transition. Find the pocket. Find the pockets that make the most sense to you. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. When you stop acting like life is happening to you and more it's just happening around you and you need to adjust, it's a good perspective switch. Make that perspective switch. Because it is very, very easy to play that victim card and act like life is happening to you. Nah. Bow your neck, Arab, babe. Let's do some unqualified dad advice. Oh, also, dude, we went to a craft show. Like a big deal one. Went to a craft fair. My mom was in it. She bought a company where she collects petrified wood from this petrified forest legally, right? And she'll cut the petrified wood down. It's called Pieces of Time Montana. It's so fucking cool. Like, she does drawer pulls, so like for cabinetry and stuff, made out of like petrified wood. So it's rock, right? But it's stone now because it's petrified wood. And she just makes these things. She just uses her artistic ability to make these different things out of this petrified wood. And it's so freaking cool and so pretty. And she got to like, she was in this craft show, just raking it in, just absolutely brought it to the house. It was so cool. Jordan and I have never been to a craft show when we have money in our account. Okay. We've never done anything in life with money in our account. So all of this life experience is kind of new to us. We are craft show sluts, dude. I can't tell you, dude, we are just buying art. We're just buying art. Oh, this little old lady that is the most beautiful soul of all time. The most beautiful, beautiful face, probably 68, 69 years old. Beautiful face, amazing teeth, glowing with the light of 1,000 suns, had this painting that she made of just this cabin. It was like a cabin in a field with some trees and shit that caught my wife's attention so aggressively. And we just went, we're going to buy that. And she was like, really? Like, the amount of joy that you're able to bring to an artist when you, first of all, connect with and resonate with their pieces, and then you're able to support them in some way. We're craft show sluts. We bought like 5 pieces of art. And then there was this guy that made leather. I bought a leather journal that he created. And I also bought a new leather wallet. Jordan was a little bit upset about that because she had just bought me a leather wallet that she was really happy to give me. But I was supporting local artists. When the wallet that she gave me falls apart, I'll use his. So essentially, but whatever, dude. Craft show sluts. The concept that someone was sitting down in their little workshop and created this thing with their talent, and then they are trying to sell that to you. There's something so real about that. There's something so expressive about that from like a pure place in their soul that I'm like, swipe it. Now I'm like, here's a couple bills. You know what I mean? I'm like, here's that green. Go get some fucking food or pay your rent or whatever, because holy shit, the talent, dude. We are slut. We walked out of there and we went, we're probably not going to buy groceries this month, but that's fine. You know, we'll buy groceries next month. We're craft show sluts. We're absolute craft show sluts. Also, check out Pieces of Time Montana. Shout outs. So sick. But anyways, let's do some unqualified dad advice real quick. And we're going to do it straight from the advice column. We have no personal connection to these. We're going to see if we can help some people out. We're going to scroll stop on Reddit. And this first one says, husband is refusing to send me photos he took of my kid and I. Okay, that's super strange. I would just say from jump, that's super weird. The other day, my toddler was being affectionate to me and my husband took some photos. I asked him to text them to me because I really liked them. For context, I have maybe one other photo with both my kiddo and I in it because I am usually the one taking the picture. I feel ya. I like to capture the little moments with my wife and kids a lot, but then my kids are looking through pictures. Charlotte's so obsessed with looking at pictures, she asks for it 7 times a day because we don't let them watch TV every single day. And since she doesn't get that, she goes, pictures? And I go, yeah, you can look at pictures. And then she'll just sit there and scroll through pictures on the phone for like however long until you say stop, you know. But she asks for it every day. But That's mommy and that's Gracie and that's me. Yeah, that is. That's mommy and that's Gracie. Yeah. That's mommy and that's me. Yeah. That's mommy. Yeah. That's mommy. Yeah. And then Gracie's starting to put it together. Daddy, where are you? And I'm like, I'm taking the picture. But then in my mind, it's fucking with me like, I have like 11 pictures of me and my kids. I have like 11. You know what I mean? Whatever, I got podcast clips with me and my kids, so suck it. Okay. For context, I have maybe one other photo with both my kiddo and I in it because I am usually the one taking the picture. He refused. Okay. I asked 3 separate times for him to send them over, and each time he would just say no. When pressed for a reason, he just said, because they're mine. Keep in mind, I have taken many photos of the kids and him and have always sent them to him when asked. The whole thing is really bizarre to me. I don't really understand why he wouldn't want me to have this photo. It is not as if I am taking the photo from him. I would merely also just have a copy. I plan on asking him his reason and explaining the specific photo is important to me because I have very few pictures where I am included. That being said, does anyone have any earthly clue as to why he would do this? Not one that's rational. The level of ownership that he's feeling is so fucking strange. Okay, let's look at this through love and light. Peace, love, and light. Cheer up, babe, the podcast. You know, let's dance on the bridge for a second. Maybe he took the photos and he immediately thought, I have something special in mind that I want to give to her with these. Like he immediately thought, wow, this picture is so beautiful. Such good representation of my wife and my kids. I want to blow it up and get it framed for her. That's the only thing that makes sense in my mind. The only thing. And let's see what the top comment is. Does your husband generally do things that make it seem like he hates you? It sounds like he hates you. And that's the internet. You know? Wow. I say let's give this guy a little bit more benefit of the doubt because that was fucking crazy. That was a crazy response. But ultimately, the advice on this is ask him why. Also, why didn't you ask him why in the middle of it? What kind of broken communication is there in your household where you go, can you please send me those pictures? And he goes, no. And you don't ask him to send the pictures again. You just go, why? You know, a lot of questions in the world can get answered if you just go, why? And he goes, because they're mine. And you go, no, they're not. They're pictures on your phone. Send them to me. And then he's going to say, no. And you're going to say, this is fucking weird. And make him feel weird about it. Until eventually he just cracks and tells you what he wants to use the pictures for. And it turns out to be a good thing. And you don't have a horrible relationship that you need to end. You're welcome. Scroll. Stop. Has anyone ever broken up with a partner because they don't want to sleep with you anymore? Yeah. Most guys. What? 22-year-old dude. 28-year-old chick. That's all it says after that. Been together 2 years and she doesn't want to be intimate with me anymore. It seems like I'm putting a lot of effort into being the best partner I can, but it's just not good enough. Every time we get together, we have a great time, so I just don't understand what is wrong. I don't want to end our relationship because I love a lot of things about her, but I can't take feeling unwanted and unattractive anymore. Okay, dude. Every guy has been through this in some capacity, okay? Every single guy has been through this in some capacity. Here's what you're doing that's wrong, all right? Because here's what it is. Guys, we could just always fuck. We don't need all those bells and whistles, okay? But that's not what, like, loving sex in a relationship is. Loving sex in a relationship is about intimacy and connection. And here's one thing that for sure, in general, women need. The foreplay isn't a physical thing, bro. The foreplay is the actions and intentions that you put in before, okay? And if you consistently do that, guess what? You're consistently going to be getting slapped around, all right? In the best way. You know what I mean when I say that. I'm saying you want her to play in the weeds. Okay, I'm not going to make too much of a joke about that. Let's be let's be a little bit serious, okay? Guys' feeling of intimacy and feeling attractive is when our girls want to be physically active with us, okay? I would say in my experience, all right, I'm not trying to paint everybody with the same brush, but I'm saying in my experience, the girl feels attractive. It depends on her love language, but when you are showing her that you know her, okay? So that means, is it acts of service that she responds to well? You act on that. And also making sex like a need and then a guilt for not being reciprocated. Oh, dude, nothing's going to dry that shit up faster. Are you crazy? Are you crazy? I've had this conversation with my wife, but instead of drying her up, I asked her, what do you need from me in order to be in the mood more often? This was a while back. This is like right after we had kids, which naturally that's when that happens. Like right after you have kids, your whole world gets shifted around and suddenly it's really, really hard to stay connected with each other because all of your time and attention is on this new human that you created. So it's really easy to grow apart. And if you don't keep your fucking nose to the grindstone and focus on your relationship, it happens all the time, dude. So you got to be aware of that and know that. But I'm saying in that instance, I wasn't doing the victim thing that I was talking about earlier. You know, I wasn't like, oh, this is happening to me. It's like, no. What can you do to affect it? So I asked her, I was like, you tell me what you need from me. Like, what? And I don't mean to be give you the ick on this one, but what turns you on when I do something? Tell me what it is. And then I do that as often as I possibly fucking can. And when you do that and you're open and honest with each other and you take responsibility for your part in wanting to get her to that level rather than just like, she never fucks me. This is stupid, dude. I can't handle being unattractive. It's like, yeah, then don't just... You a little bitch? I hate to tell you this, man, but as the dude, that's kind of our role. Okay, she holds the power in that situation. Put her in a life that she want, like that reciprocation is second nature. She's feeling disconnected from you way before the bedroom in order for this to play out. You've made some bad moves that has turned her off to you. Adjust your moves. Relationships are, it's constant effort, okay? I heard this thing this week that was the most beautiful way I've ever heard it put. I was so mad because I didn't think of putting it this way. You know how they say marriage is work? Marriage isn't work like you clock in and out of a job that you're just getting a paycheck for. Marriage is work like an artist painting a picture. It's the work put forward into something with a beautiful intent and passion to make the most beautiful thing that you can. It's that kind of work, and it's constant. It's not work like the job that you're pissed off you have to go to at the end of a weekend. It's inspired, and it's beautiful. And if you put enough work into it, it will be your greatest creation. And if you put that level of attention and emotion into your day-to-day efforts with that person, she's probably gonna fuck you, okay? Scroll. Stop. Would you date someone in a wheelchair? All people seem to notice it is my disability and it sucks. I wouldn't, but I'm married. Have you been with someone with a disability like a wheelchair user? If so, how was it? If not, would you consider it? 30-year-old guy navigating the dynamics of relationships while embracing unique needs as a wheelchair user due to cerebral palsy. I found it challenging to meet women, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on dating someone in a wheelchair. And yes, I can still have sex, my man. As a straight white male wheelchair user, a lot of descriptors in that one. I've noticed the struggle in getting people to swipe right. I'm curious about your diverse perspectives in this matter. Share your thoughts on the complexities of forming connections in the dating world, especially considering the hesitations people may have. Yeah, man, here's the deal. Ultimately, what situation you're in is like, yeah, your pool is going to be much smarter, smaller. Your pool is tiny because most people are on the hunt for normalcy. And I'm not trying to say that you're not normal, but your situation is abnormal. You know, it is a rare situation inherently to be in a wheelchair and to have cerebral palsy. Okay. So, but here's the cool thing about your position. The type of person and personality that will truly love and cherish a relationship with someone with a disability like this is a higher class of people. Like, it is a such an emotionally developed type of person that has the capacity to fully love a person like that. So the cards are stacked against you in the volume of your relationship pool, but the people that are in the pool that are going to go for this are a better standard of people. You get to experience something that a lot of people with just two normal situations going on, like two just normally functioning, haven't really had to live in the sacrifice of this, that maybe the relationship is a little bit more shallow. Like the juxtaposition from what you're going to find versus the last advice question, you're going to get to experience a very, very real level of love. You just have to keep open to it and stay yourself. And hopefully your personality will attract a person of that standard, because that's what it's going to have to be. You can't be a dick no matter what level of disability or normalcy you're in. You'll never win as a dick. But if you're a good guy, the person that is going to be attracted to you, it's going to be so real that I almost envy it. It's just going to take a lot more hunting for you, a lot more exposure. You're probably not going to find that shit on Tinder, because dating apps and shit are inherently shallow. It's separating the real connection that should come with relationships. It's probably not going to be where you find that person. But I would say count the blessings of what you are going to get to eventually experience, and then just love that life as much as you can, and put yourself in as much situations and exposure as you possibly can to get yourself in front of the right eyes. But ultimately, your pool is smaller, dude, and you're just going to have to keep going. You got time, though. You're 30. You're a year younger than me, you fucking child. You fucking young buck. Also, sick that you can still fuck. Super sick. But anyways, scroll. Am I being overdramatic? Usually when you have to ask yourself that question, that answer comes inherent. Let's see if old efficient fig 8899 is being overdramatic, shall we? FYI with 4 exclamation points, all caps lock. Not a great start. I'm not upset, caps lock, with my sister being in a relationship at all, 3 exclamation points. Feels overdramatic. If we were to read that as you typed it, okay, I'll just read it as you typed it. Am I being overdramatic? FYI, I am not upset with my sister being in a relationship at all. I'm happy for her, but it's the way she's allowed to do all of this while my parents can't cut me some slack. Sounds kind of fucking dramatic. You know what I'm saying? So for some context, oh, this is from a 19-year-old dude, and this is a 17-year-old little sister. I mean, Jesus, dude. Yeah, guys, you're going to grow up soon. Are you mad that mommy and daddy treat your baby sister better or different? I should say different. Are you mad? Oh, fucking kids. Okay. Just recently, yesterday, got into a relationship and has been seeing this guy for a little over a month. Okay, but how did she just yesterday get into a relationship with a guy that she's been seeing for a month? Your math ain't mathing. I've been in a long-distance relationship with my boyfriend, and he's in the UK and I am in the US. Completely opposite and different situation. So far, What I'm getting at is I've been with my boyfriend for over a year now and only saw each other once in person for a week when he came to stay at my house with my family. I've been wanting to go and see him in the UK, but my parents don't want me to, so I've asked for him to be able to come back this May for my sister's graduation. They don't really like the idea and are saying they want me to get a job first before I make these plans. I'm currently in a dental assistant school and have already applied to jobs. All I'm asking is for him to be able to come for a week or two. And last time he came, we went out every day. My parents' idea. He didn't mind if we stayed in or went out. He was just happy being with me. And I said this time we could just stay home as we just wanted to be with each other. Also, when he came, I think I might have had about 5 entire minutes with him alone the entire week. Everyone was dragging him along, wanting to talk to him, and we never had any privacy. I felt like the third wheel 90% of the time, so this time I just wanted it to be more intimate. Anyways, my sister starts going out with this guy about a month or so ago, and she is allowed to go everywhere with him. She's been to his house 3 times. She's there right now. He has gone to the water park with him and just is constantly out with him. My parents had never met his parents and still haven't. My parents are super Mexican, strict, and they're letting her do all of this no problem. So I get upset saying, how is she allowed to do all this and I can't have 1 week with my boyfriend? And the response is that they want me to focus on school and finding a job first while my sister asks for money every single time she goes out. She even owes me money, yet she gets it without a complaint every time. Yeah, man, look, your parents are probably a little bit uncomfortable with the fact that you're gay, and that sucks for you. Like, that sucks, you know? But in terms of the level of disappointed or unaccepting that they could be, this is pretty fucking lowbrow. They just don't want you, like, off-banging your boyfriend all the time because they haven't fully come to grips with it, all right? And that sucks, dude, but that's, like, that's the hand you were dealt. Like, I understand you're, it's an abnormal situation. It was probably super duper uncomfortable to come out, but at least you have parents that love you anyways, you know? You know how many of my friends that are gay that, like, they don't even have relationships with their parents anymore, completely shunned from the family? Like, count your blessings in that. And yeah, that absolutely sucks. But also, you're 19, okay? If I had a kid who was fucking 19 that wanted their long distance partner to be over at my house all the time, like for 2 weeks, and they just be banging under my roof, that's never gonna be allowed in my house. I don't give a fuck who you are. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit if you're gay, boy, girl, whatever the fuck, kid of mine that I'm talking about. When you're 19, you're not going to have your long distance partner staying at my house for 2 weeks and y'all sleeping in the same bed and shit. You want to do that shit? You're 19. Get your own spot. And that sucks for you, but that's life, my guy. All right. Get a little bit of financial independence. Get out there. You can't hang on mom and dad's tip, because as long as you're under mom and dad's roof, it's mom and dad's rules. You don't get a say in this. And that's the nature of being a kid. And that's the other thing that will get you out of the house and onto your life. You know, it's scary out there, but make the jump and start making your own decisions. This wouldn't be a fucking problem if you had your own spot. You know what I mean? And go out there, and you're going to suffer. Because the world is expensive. Wife and I, Rice Krispies and peanut butter, 6 fucking states away, struggling. Right now, it seems that your biggest struggle in life is that mommy and daddy won't let you see your boyfriend for a couple weeks. And the only reason that it's even bothering you that much is because you have the comparison of your little sister who gets to go hang out with her boyfriend who sounds like lives in the same town. Your life is pretty fucking chill right now. Either accept the level of lucky that you are, or jump into the pool with both feet and try to swim like the rest of us do when we move out of mommy and daddy's house. Okay? It's bigger than I can't see my boyfriend who lives in the UK. Lives in a different country, bro. Come on. And that was Cheer Up Babes Podcast. I hope you guys had a good week. Hope you have a great week. Hope you dance on that bridge till the sun comes up. Wow. Changing my own fucking saying. We are in our bow our fucking neck era. Go out there. Align your life in ways that are going to feed your soul, not your ego. Okay? We can all be great people if we just are a little bit intentional with our decisions. And that's what we're going to do this week. We're going to focus on that this week. We have that implanted into our fucking brains this week. It's going to be a beautiful week. We're going to go out there. Don't be a bummer. Cheer up, babe.